Beautiful. So why is that, you said your favorite ballad, one of your favorite ballads?
I like the words, and it reminds me of my mom because I learned it real early on, and it's one of the songs I learned from Armed Forces music, sheet music. See, after Battle Creek Civic Theater, we'd go across the street to the Gaslight Inn, and they'd keep me playing by giving me glasses of free red wine to keep me playing. So that was a great way to grow up when you're in ninth grade, you know?
So you're in ninth grade drinking red wine?
Yeah, for free.
Playing a gig?
Yeah, for like after the rehearsal, we'd go over there and party till like midnight, and then I'd go home and do my homework. But anyway, this guy walks in, kind of creepy-looking guy, and he says, "You want some sheet music?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, come over to my house." I was in the service, and I've got all this Armed Forces sheet music. I don't play anymore. And I did. I went over there. He gave me all the sheet music. And I learned Let's Get Away From It All from that. And that was one of my mom's favorites. So was Side by Side. She used to like that.
Wow.
We had a baby grand at home. She used to like just go run through chords like every 6 months. She'd just play like chords like in cycles. Just for her own amusement, you know?
Yeah.
But we had, you know, there were four kids, but she didn't make any of us play because she made the first boy play, and he carved James Dean faces in the piano lid. So she didn't ask anymore after that.
Wow.
But you know what I mean? We're going to do a whole show on people who believed in me, but you could do a whole show on women who believed in me, right? That suddenly dawned on me.
Yeah,
talk about all the women that helped you.
Yeah, talk about that. I know you had a teacher.
Well, here's a good example. I told you my first job was fiddler. I got that job because of a lady named Margaret Skidmore. I was best friends with her daughter. We were in choir together, and Margaret was involved in Battle Creek Civic Theater, and they started rehearsals for fiddler, and the accompanist fell pregnant, dropped out of the show. Margaret speaks up and says, "I know this kid. He's only in ninth grade, but he can read anything." And I got the job. I put my way through college playing those shows. I played 25 shows with those guys. Hmm. You know, and it's a great background for a jazz pianist because a lot of the American popular songs started out in Broadway shows. So I played Anything Goes, you know, It's the Lovely, etc. I played Of Thee I Sing. There's all the great Gershwin songs in it. And I played Forum. I still do a song from Forum. And I say the first one was, I still play Matchmaker from Fiddler today, to this day, just because I like that memory of it.
Well, you always have such an interesting rep. When I play with you, you will write out the three set lists, and you'll give me this sheet of paper with all these tunes on it. And I think I know a pretty good amount of tunes after, you know, 20 years of being a professional. I don't know every tune, but I know a lot of tunes. And usually at least half the tunes on this page that you'll give me, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I either haven't played them before or I've never even heard them.
Right.
And you know all these tunes. So I'm thinking maybe some of these are from the shows that you played.
Oh, yeah. They all are. They all are. And, you know, my dad taught me some songs that we had a good relationship, like from his age 80 to 90. To keep his brain alive, I'd call Pop and I'd say, "Pop, I need some new songs." And he's in Battle Creek and he'd leave them on my phone machine in Grand Rapids. And sometimes he'd leave a song that I had never heard of. I had no idea where it came from. And I'd say, "Pop, where'd you get that?" And he'd say, "Oh, I don't know. I remember that when I was 10. Well, Pop was born in 1910. We're talking about 1920. It was like an American folk song.
Whoa.
It wasn't even an American popular song.
Wow.
It was always, he always had a reason.
All your tunes are just so interesting. You usually don't play the...
I know
the...
people say that, and I, you know, sometimes the guys that play with me say, "Well, how'd you learn all those songs?" And I always say, "One at a time." Right? And one of the ways, actually, that I did a period where I did learn quite a few songs is when Paul and Pete moved to Ann Arbor and I was left alone.
You're talking about Paul Keller
and Pete Sears.
Pete Sears.
when they moved to Ann Arbor after Billy's, I was at the Harley Hotel solo 5 nights a week. So I thought, oh God, I'm going to go crazy. I play hate playing alone anyway. What am I going to do? I thought, teach yourself a bunch of songs. So I did. I started doing that. And it made the time go faster. Mm-hmm. And then when the businessmen at the bar didn't clap, I'd clap underneath the piano for myself. But it's fun. I did it because I love it.
Yeah.
Right? And then once you know it for life. So it's always worth it. You can tell your students that.
Yeah.
If you learn one song every day, you've learned 7 songs in 7 days, you know, and in a month you've learned 30 songs. And then by the end of the year, you know 365 songs. They asked Irving Berlin that. How do you write all those songs? He said, I get up every day and I write a song. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not, but I write one. It's my job.
Who said that?
Irving Berlin.
Irving Berlin. Okay.
That's my job.
Yeah.
To learn songs.
Yeah.
Because I'm a jazz pianist. And it's great training. Because if you learn the words, when you learn the melody, you learn the correct melody. And there's always a correct melody. And you can always tell when somebody doesn't actually know it.
Yeah.
And part of the genius of these songs is there's a little difference. Like Fred just started singing My Funny Valentine.
Fred Knapp.
Another
drummer.
We got him singing now. He sings like a bird. And so in My Funny Valentine, in A1, the melody starts on the tonic. In A2, the melody starts on the minor third. But in A3, it starts on the tonic and then does the minor third. So it's a combination of both.
Mm.
If you don't know that, you've just lost the uniqueness of the melody, right? And so I had to tell Fred that because he did the third on the third A both times. I said, well, you might not know this, but that happened to me. I was in Lansing, and we went to hear this guy who played organ and trombone. And he had a cup on to hold the trombone. He had a cup holder on his organ. And I sat in and played Laura. And he pulled me aside. He said, that's not the melody to Laura. And he taught me the correct melody because the note changes one note in the second half.
Wow.
And I never forgot it because he made a point of letting me know.
Yeah, I mean, somebody wrote that melody on purpose, and it should be played how they intended. And, you know, there are a lot of people that are just kind of skating over these tunes, kind of playing the melody,
mm-hmm.
don't know the lyrics, which, as you said, helps. I mean, it helps to know the right notes, but it also helps you to remember the melody if you know the lyrics.
That's correct.
It takes a lot of work, though, right, to learn all that.
You mentioned, gotta love it.
You mentioned earlier verses and choruses, and, you know, usually in jazz music, we play the chorus. You know, we'll play the melody of the chorus of these show tunes
mm-hmm.
and improvise over that. And every once in a while, someone will know the verse, which is, you know, the story, the setup from the show.
Yeah.
And most people don't do that. But every once in a while, you hear someone like yourself play a verse up front. And you think, okay, they've really done their homework. They really researched this.
It adds to the excitement and the beauty and of the experience for the audience. Because if you don't know what's coming up, it's a surprise.
Yeah.
And like you say, it's the introduction to the song. It sets up the song. It's part of the song's story. And that's what we're all doing is telling. Those songs, that's why they're so good, is they tell a story.
Yeah. Do you have a tune that you could play that has a verse?
Oh, we could do the verse to something, of course. What's that Gershwin number? But Not For Me. And the verse is Old Man Sunshine. Yeah, it's a good verse, like a verse that I can't get started. I'm a glum one. right? Don Shirley, there's a movie out about him right now. They're called The Green Book.
Yeah.
That was a big number for him. I Can't Get Started, because Waterboy. But he was a classical pianist, so his tone was so beautiful that he could just state the melody to I Can't Get Started, and it'd be like a masterpiece. Yeah. And he'd do that, and I think My Funny Valentine and Waterboy is a song he actually wrote. Okay. But yeah, we could do verses all night.
Jeez. So much history and information that you have, John. Every time I talk to you, I feel like it's a lesson. We're definitely going to have you back here to do some more. So tell us about what you're doing now. You've got a lot of steady gigs. I mean, you mentioned something a minute ago about how you played solo piano for 5 nights a week. That's the way it used to be. People used to have 5-night-a-week gigs, 3-night-a-week gigs.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen anymore. Yeah, but now you've pieced together a steady schedule where you have 3 or maybe 4 places where you play at every single week. Tell us where we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Monday nights at the Republic, 7 to 10. Friday nights at the JW Marriott, 6 to 10. Saturday nights at Nodos, 7 to 10.
These are all in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, I'm looking for a Thursday or a Sunday. Nodos just bought the Bill Maher in Grand Haven, so I'll eventually be playing there on a Thursday night or a Sunday night. But I tell you what, that's your other job as a musician, is finding the next gig, right? And it's always best to find the next gig before you lose the gig you've got. So I should be looking for a Friday night right now in case this Friday night ends. But I tell you, I have a story connected to that about Paul and Pete. I moved back 9 years ago from Phoenix. I was languishing in the desert out there. And first thing I heard when I moved back was Paul and then Pete. And they both, I'd been away for 6.5 years, and they both sounded 10 years better than me. And it suddenly struck me, why? Because they'd been playing 5-6 nights a week at the Bird of Paradise or the Firefly. And I had been in Phoenix grinding my teeth, playing solo or backing up singers or playing once every 2 weeks. And I made a vow to myself at that point that now I'm back in Grand Rapids, I'm going to play 5-6 nights a week if it kills me, because I got to catch up to Paul and Pete. And I did.
Well, they're remarkable.
Sometimes
players.
We didn't get paid.
Yeah.
Or we'd get paid late, or the check would bounce 2 weeks later. But it didn't matter because we were in a bar every night playing. And that's job one. That's the most important thing to teach a kid is, are you in a band? Who are you in a band with? Why aren't you in a band? Don't you have 2 friends you can form a band with? Don't you have a basement you can go to, your girlfriend's basement every night till 3 in the morning? Don't you have a garage you can play with? I'm not talking about a coffee house or even a bar. You create your own gigs. Play at your friend's house. That's what I did when I was growing up.
Yeah.
We'd play at our parents' houses, their house parties. I'm in the corner playing the piano, right?
Yeah, you got to make it happen. Huh?
Yeah, it's a great life. There's no life like it. It's the best life ever. Right, Keith?
Yes.
Players only love you when they're playing. That's a line from a song, right?
It's Stevie Nicks, right?
If you're not playing, I'm not playing, I don't love you.
You're right. Well, you're definitely making it happen, John. You're making it happen for yourself and also all the other guys that you hire.
That's good.
You know, you've got some great musicians that play with you. You mentioned Fred Knapp on drums.
Dennis Shebikov's coming up tomorrow night.
On bass.
He's been playing. He's been driving up from Kalamazoo every weekend.
Yeah.
I'm so flattered by that and so thrilled with Dennis. You know Dennis and how good he is.
Of course.
And so I'm thrilled by that. I met him through Fred at the Union.
Where can our listeners find you? Besides those gigs, can they find you online?
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. SoundCloud.
Okay.
John Shea Trio, one word. J-O-H-N-S-H-E-A Trio, one word.
Shea, S-H-E-A.
Like Shea Stadium in New York, the Big
that's
Apple.
Right.
Your town, man.
That's it.
Your kind of town.
And you're on Facebook.
Manhattan. And it's just under my name.
Okay.
I don't have a Facebook site. It's just John Shea. And the way to find me on Facebook is when the list of John Shea's comes up on Facebook, I'm the pink oval cartoon. That's what I always tell people.
Well, the best place to find you is at one of those gigs, because then they can meet you and really experience you. Yes. In person. Yep. Well, let's finish up with another tune.
That's it. That's a perfect introduction for this last song, because when I was reluctant to make a CD in the studio because I wanted the live sound, and I was afraid I couldn't play with it without being in a bar. And so, and this one tune on the CD, Always, by Irving Berlin, I was able to do that. I was so happy. Something happened during the song, and I took off, and I rode a wave, and, you know, Rob and Greg just went with me, and it just kind of worked out. And it made me happy that I'd made the record, because we had achieved what I thought we couldn't achieve just through sheer luck and divine intervention.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, John, it's been such a great treat to have you here. All the history, all the connection to Southwest Michigan jazz and music that you brought today. It's been great to hear these stories, and I look forward to more. Thanks for being with us.
You're so welcome.